The mind, when it's in a state of concentration, is expansive. Your awareness fills the whole body. The object you're focusing on, the breath, fills the whole body. But to get there, you have to start out with restraint. Your mind will stay with the body in and of itself, and you put aside all thoughts with reference to the world. That's the description of mindfulness practice, but it's also the description of how you get into concentration. And although sometimes we hear that mindfulness is an open, accepting, non-judgmental state of mind, it's not how the Buddha described it. The image that he uses are those of restraint. The quail that has to stay in its field. If it wanders away from the field, it's going to get caught by the hawk. The monkeys have to stay in their own territory in the mountains. If they wander in the territory of human beings, they're going to get trapped and killed. So to get the mind expansive, first you have to make it small. Focused on the breath, focused on what's right here, right now. And say no, no, no to any thoughts that would wander away. So only when you exercise some restraint like this did you get some solidity in the mind, get some focus. And then there comes the power of the focus. And that's what gets expansive. The same principle applies outside as well. When you're dealing with the outside world, you've got to exercise restraint. And it's from restraint that the practice of goodwill can grow. In fact, the Buddha calls goodwill a type of restraint. You start out by being very careful about what you take in and how you take it in. When you look at something, why you're looking at it, who's doing the looking, for what purpose? Is greed doing the looking? Anger? Delusion? Or is wisdom doing the looking? Is your purpose in doing these things? This is one of the insights you're going to have to develop as you meditate, and it gets deeper and deeper and more subtle. That you're not just on the passive receiving side of things. It's not the case that the mind is sitting around very innocently, free of the creative version of delusion, and something sparks it, provokes it. It's out looking. It's got a purpose. The problem is its purposes are not always very clear. A muddled idea of maybe what happiness might be and where you might look for it. But it starts even before you do things outside, just getting engaged in the senses has a purpose. And you want to get clear about that. Because if you allow greed, aversion, and delusion to do the looking and the listening and the tasting and the touching, then they're going to come out in your thoughts and words and deeds. In other words, you have to exercise restraint both on things that come into the mind and then what goes out of the mind. And when you're careful in this way, that's when you have a good foundation for the practice of metta or goodwill. That sutta we chanted just now talks about the things you have to do to create the right environment. You have to be easy to talk to. In other words, easy to instruct. You have to be gentle. Because otherwise, the things you do are at cross purposes with the idea of goodwill. Because goodwill is a wish for happiness. It's not loving kindness. There are a lot of animals out there that don't want to be loved by us. There are a lot of people who don't want to be loved by us. They just want our goodwill. And often, goodwill means may we go our separate ways peacefully. And think of that phrase, may all beings look after themselves with ease. You're not saying, I'll be there for everybody. You're basically saying, may all beings have the capacity to be there for themselves. You're basically saying, may beings be skillful. course, that you are included among beings as well. That's why we start out with the thought, Ahang Sukhito Homi, may I be happy. May I understand the causes for true happiness and be willing and able to act on them. And those include developing skillful qualities and being restrained in unskillful qualities to the point where you can abandon them. But before you can abandon them, you hold them in place. The image the Buddha gives is that our emotions are like a stream. And it's restraint of mindfulness that is like a dam that holds them in place. It's discernment that traces back, well, where does the stream come from and stops it at the source. You're not going to find the source until you've learned some restraint first. Of course, when the mind is restrained like this, part of it is going to rebel because it's been looking for its food in sight, sound, smells, taste, tactile sensations. It's looking for its food in greed, aversion, and delusion. And even though the Buddha says that these things are like fire, they're like the kind of spicy food that burns all the way down, still that's what we like. We're kind of like hell beings that like to eat fire. So we've got to find an alternative source of food. This is why we practice concentration. Again, starting with mindfulness immersed in the body. That image the Buddha gives is of a post. You've got six animals, and each of them is on a leash. Now, if you just tie the leashes to one another, then the animals are going to pull in their various directions. The bird is going to fly up to the sky. The snake is trying to go down to a hole in the ground. The dog is going to the village, the jackal. Or the hyena is going to a charnel ground to feed on some corpses. The monkey is going to go up to a tree. The crocodile is going to pull everybody else down into the river. And thus, whichever one of your emotions is strongest at any one time, it's going to pull the whole rest of your mind. If you don't have a good post. So here the post is mindfulness immersed in the body. You tie the leashes of the animals to that. And then pull as they might, they're not going to go anywhere. They end up lying down right here. So the practice of restraint requires that you feed the mind well. So again, you start with the restraint of focusing on one topic in and of itself. Then when the mind gets settled in there, that's when it can get expansive in the present moment. All too often it's like an amoeba who sends its pseudopods out into the past, out into the future. But they get sent out and they die. You send them some more out and they die. But here you want them to stay in the present moment. This is where they can live. This is where you gain your strength. So as you go through life, realize there is that sense that the mind wants to be expansive. It doesn't like to be limited. But first, before it gets that to any unlimited state, it has to put some limitations on itself. Being careful about what you look at, listen to, being especially careful about what you think. Here the Buddha gives the image of the cowherd, again, an image of restraint. When there's rice in the fields, the cowherd has to keep beating the cows back so they don't go into the fields and eat the rice. When there are unskillful thoughts in the mind, you've got to restrain them. But then once they are under restraint, then the mind can expand itself freely. That's the paradox of the practice. With restraint comes freedom. By imposing some limits on the mind, you can take the mind to a place where it's unlimited in the present moment. And from being unlimited in the present moment, you're going to be unlimited outside of space and time entirely. But it starts with restraint. This is why when those people back east asked Ajahn Sweat that time about how to carry the practice into daily life, he started with the five precepts. And restraint of the senses. Because it's the restraint and not letting the mind wander off into its defilements, that allows it to expand in other ways that are more nourishing. They're better for you, better for the people around you. So be willing to put up with the limits. Because they're for the sake of freedom.